Welcome to the Nerd Trap. I'm Josh Look.
I'm Jeff Luce.
I'm Al Rose.
And I'm Shelley Rose.
On February 27th, Leonard Nimoy passed away. And this episode is a memorial episode for this incredibly important person in all of our lives, not just for being in this silly science fiction TV show that we all love, but inspiring us and helping us identify with who we are and become comfortable with that, amongst any number of other things. So,
And I think also because he's such an integral figure in making science fiction into a little more than the kind of silly for children thing that it was before Star Trek. And that the character of Spock, which was, you know, heavily influenced by Nimoy, really making the concept real, the way that he played it and the way that he envisioned it, made it believable. And that's such a huge part of why Star Trek is what it is. As we've been thinking about him and going back and looking at things, I was reading about Roddenberry's original idea for Spock, you know, the red Scandalian from Mars.
Right.
He had such a little germ of an idea, but it was really Nimoy that grew that germ and made it into something so much bigger, to the point where, as we were saying before, we were looking at, there's a picture of the astronaut on the International Space Station. He's doing the little Vulcan hand symbol up against a window, you know, above the Earth. And what a fantastic symbol that is of how much Star Trek and Spock meant to so many of us, and especially those who, you know, follow that path, were influenced by this silly science fiction show.
I think that a term that we're hearing thrown around a lot, as we look back at him and his life, is that he's more than just an actor or an artist. That he is a pop culture icon. That he
absolutely
is permanently ingrained into who we are as a species to some extent. And that's what I feel like it's more than just the passing of a great artist. You know, it's Spock is going to outlive all of us.
Yes.
You know, all of us.
Yeah.
This character has endured as long as he has already, for very good reason. And that's so much Leonard Nimoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was thinking about, you know, since him, all the different actors that on different science fiction shows and movies that have played aliens, and how it must be impossible for every one of them to not be thinking about Spock
right
when they're doing that. You know, some obviously, like Data, was kind of like, well, how can we rip off Spock in a different way?
Yeah.
But I think all of them thinking about, well, you know, Nimoy made that character so alien, and it helped that he kind of had this little creepy look to him. But it was so more than that. It was him getting inside the head of an alien and really thinking about it.
Well, I think it was, you know, and as he said himself, he was able to play an alien because he was able to tap into his own feeling of being alienated, of being a Jew in, or a Jewish man is probably more politically correct to say, in a Catholic community in Boston, and how that felt. And he really tapped into that and created that as part of his backstory, which means that, to me, when I'm watching Star Trek, his character has a greater depth and is more fully developed than any of those other characters. You understand Spock's story. We know more about Spock than any of the other characters. And then his audience, for a large part, the Star Trek audience, are people that today we call geeks or nerds or intellectuals or people that are into science and science fiction. And those people traditionally feel a little bit alienated, more so than even the average teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could really easily relate to Spock and understand where he was coming from. And because I think he did so much work as an actor, one of the hardest things for actors to learn is to create a feeling of intimacy with their audience and to be able to be vulnerable. And because he was tapping into his own experience, he was able to do that.
Right. As opposed to most actors who look at a script and they read the script, or he did a lot more than that. And in some of the episodes we've done here in these podcasts, we've already talked about a couple of things that he did. For example, in last week's show, we talked about how in our last episode, we talked about how he kind of on the spot made up that Vulcan neck pinch, where the script called for him to hit evil Kirk over the head or give him a karate chop or whatever it was. And Nimoy says to himself, you know, that's not how a Vulcan would do it. And creates this, amongst the images that are lasting forever with Spock, that Vulcan neck pinch just creates it. And we were talking about also in... in the Naked Time? That scene, which is my favorite scene in the episode, where he's fighting with himself and he starts doing the math out loud, and how that was all just him doing that. He really, really made that character more than I think most actors take responsibility for. Yeah.
And he had quite the career.
Oh, certainly. He was on every TV show from the 50s to the mid 70s, from was it Rawhide or Wagon Train, to The Twilight Zone, to Columbo, to Mission Impossible,
Outer Limits.
He was on everything.
And he was everything. It's funny how many times he prior to Star Trek he was on shows with other actors that ended up.
Well, you see that a lot. Researching the show, I see the same names, the same shows pop up for a lot of the guest stars, a lot of the actors. It was like almost like a closed circuit.
Mm-hmm,
did all the shows, you did laps around the studios, as it were.
Right.
But, I mean, that's not to say, you think of Spock and you're like, well, what do you ever do other than Star Trek? Well, as it turns out, quite a damn bit. The guy was not a slacker by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And I think you hit the nail. I'm hitting the table. I think you got it right, Al. The big thing he did, you got to figure, what was the mindset of the actors going into Star Trek in 1966?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a one or two season, out the window. Science fiction up to that point is just it's either adventure stories, or it's childish, or it's a merger of the both. And what he did, and I think he really could have hammed it up, and it would have resulted in the show having a much shorter lifespan than it did, but he took it serious. And in fact, I think Kirk takes it serious, or William Shatner takes it serious too. And the two of them actually saying, we're going to put aside the stigma of what science fiction was up to that point. Not so much in books, but certainly on TV and in movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're going to play it straight. And we're going to bring some life to these characters. And Nimoy certainly did that with Spock. He is even more so. The cool kids loved Kirk. The nerd kids love Spock.
Let's do something great for radio. Show of hands. Who here has Spock as their favorite character?
Oh, yeah. Right here.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And it's really difficult to not raise my hand with the Vulcan salute.
Right.
It's really difficult.
I cut my hair when I was 7 years old to look like Spock.
Oh, yeah. I would like to see photos
as it
from
turns
that.
As it turns out, as it turns out, didn't look like Spock.
There was a kid who came to school. I was in first grade, and he had spent the weekend at his uncle's house. And, we talked, we did this thing in the morning where we sat around and talked about, oh, what did you do over the weekend on Mondays? And this kid talked about how he spent the weekend with his uncle and he had a great time. And he showed him how to do this thing with his hand, right? And it was like, wow. And it seemed like It seemed at first like, is that it? But then he says, no, try it. And we all tried, and none of us could do it. And then he showed us all how to do it. We didn't know, what it was.
Traction and rubber bands.
Right. Yeah. And you just put your hand between your fingers like that for a long time, and you kind of get used to it. And you get so used to it that you can't put your hand up without doing it. And I kind of went through this, like, resentful stage with the Falcon salute where I was like, I wish my hand could stop doing this thing. Much like Leonard Nimoy went through with his, his attitude towards Spock.
Right.
There was a time I think he felt trapped by the character, and maybe that's true. Maybe it did limit his future movie career thereafter. Certainly, I think back in those days, there was a lot more typecasting than there is today. And I think that has a lot to do with the limited number of outlets. If you were on TV and you had a iconic role in a show, then they wouldn't cast you for a starring role in anything else, usually. There's just a couple of exceptions to that.
Right, and if Star Trek had really ended after two or three or whatever seasons, then yes, he would have been in trouble. You could see that he would have been in trouble, even though he got some jobs on Mission Impossible and whatever, but it would have really been hard for him to break out of that.
I think they were considering him for that position, that role in Mission Impossible, but he got the Star Trek role.
Mm-hmm.
So if Star Trek didn't happen, we probably would have known him for Mission Impossible.
And the enduring legacy of Star Trek, I mean, everybody figured it would fade away, which of course it didn't. Even our younger audience members may not remember. But in the early 70s, it was only because it was on late night reruns that anybody knew anything about it. And
And who would ever have thought that they would have ended up making 24 movies and whatever.
Four more franchises. Right. So what I'm trying to say here is, he had some resentment built up against the character, even though, as it turns out, it would be his gravy train, as it were, for the rest of his life.
Right.
But you can see that where he considers himself an artist. He's like, I got a lot more to offer than just this one character. And yet here I am trapped in the role. And unable to get out. So I guess it's understandable. Although at the time when I was younger, I too fell into the camp of, you don't like Spock, well, screw you then. Right? Because it's kind of a flip off to the fans that adore you when you say, this character? I don't like it so much.
Right.
Although later, he talked about how Spock became so much a part of who he was that he found himself embracing it, and oftentimes just in his regular life as a human being, found himself going, well, I'm thinking like Spock, or I'm doing this the way Spock would do it, and he had that personal struggle, even with his own personal identity, like how much of what I'm thinking or what I'm doing is Spock, and how much of it is me. And I think that he explored that in his books.
Right. And the changes, the titles showing, how at first maybe he was a bit resentful, but then, he accepted it. I remember I was thinking back to when the movies first came out and how especially at one point they were talking about that Nimoy, they weren't going to make any more movies because Nimoy was refusing to do it. And so I decided to see what the truth behind that was. And it turns out the truth is that wasn't the truth at all. That it was really fans assuming that because of his book, I Am Not Spock. But that he, didn't really have issues with doing those movies. And,
well, after all, he did the animated series.
Yeah.
And he, when he found out that I think it was Michelle and George hadn't been hired to do the voices for the animated series, he went and made a big to-do about it them hired. Because that's how he needed to make money. He understood that he needed to make money, and he knew that his fellow actors needed the gig, and he went out and fought for that. He also fought for Michelle to get equal pay, which was interesting at the time to think that Michelle wasn't getting paid equally. And he found out, and he went and kicked up, made a fuss over it. And so she got equal pay to the rest of the guys that were in the show.
That's strange. You would think union rules would have required her to get paid the same.
No, and Nimoy was a lifelong, I guess, feminist activist. He really fought for Michelle, as I said, for her pay, and he did some of his artwork. His photography was definitely feminist focused.
My wife, an artist, she's been taught by a lot of different people, and a lot of those people that she was taught by are friends with him. I know of one in particular, a guy by the name of Scott Fisher, appears in one of Leonard's photography books. I believe it's called Inner Selves, where he photographs people in sometimes these fairly ridiculous situations where they're just kind of letting loose and trying to, like, you know, some of it's funny, some of it not. You know, this one particular guy, he's in his underwear playing guitar, jumping in the air, making a good rock and roll pose. So I mean, like, and that is something also to talk. Something else to talk about. He's not just an actor. He was very passionate about his photography, particularly late in his life. He's a poet, as we
how many,
all know
how
at
many
this point.
Books did he, poetry did he release? Several.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than one for sure. I don't know off the top of my head.
And
three.
Also,
three.
Yeah. Huh. Three. And I also remember, and I actually went and looked to see if there was a book that he had written on acting and directing, and I couldn't find it. But I remember when I was studying theater, he must have written some articles or something that we had read in class about acting and directing. And he was also an acting instructor, an acting teacher. Mm. So, yeah, he was really a Renaissance man.
Mm-hmm. How many films did he direct? I know In Search of Spock.
He did In Search of Spock. Well, he
wrote directorial debut.
In Search of Spock.
He directed it as
No, he didn't write In Search of Spock. He wrote The Voyage Home, right?
Yes. Yes. That's
and
true.
Directed
and
that.
The
and
directed it. Country, but we won't talk about that too much.
He directed that? I thought
he,
Shatner
he wrote
did.
That.
Oh, he wrote that. Shatner directed that
one.
Yeah.
Not everybody's perfect.
No. Undiscovered Country is the sixth movie, correct?
I don't know. 1991. Star Trek VI, yeah.
Yeah, six isn't bad. Five is bad. Five is the one that Shatner directed.
Yeah.
Right.
In future episodes of the Nerd Trap, we can discuss the relative merits
of
every movie made after Wrath of Khan.
Right. Right. No, I agree.
And Three Men and a Baby.
And Three Men and a Baby, which apparently has an important status in Jeff Luce's life.
We'll not talk about it. My wife
and that and that actually was kind of controversial because again he directed it and felt that it was like a feminist statement, and then other people really thought it was anti-feminist.
No, I can see the feminist side.
You can see that.
You know, for the guys that don't appreciate what it takes to raise a kid,
right?
Here are three man children. Thrust into taking care of a child,
and hilarity ensues.
And hilarity ensues on screen.
Well, I think his feminist statement was really about how human beings are human beings, and that, you know, men have the same abilities and instinct to love and take care of a child that a woman does, which is a feminist statement.
I don't think that's true. As speaking for all men everywhere.
As you tend to do.
Yeah.
Going back to a couple of things that we touched on, that Vulcan hand salute, there's a great story that he tells. You can probably find the video somewhere on the internet where he talks about that he's a kid. You know, he's being brought up as an Orthodox Jew, and there's a ceremony that they take him to. And as they're doing the ceremony, he's told, you know, we're going to do this sacred hand symbol. Don't look. And he says, so, of course, I looked. and that symbol is what he brought in. Another thing that he brought to the character, you know, that he had seen that symbol as a kid and thought, oh, that's cool. And he brings it in to Spock. Also talking about his many roles in the past. He had done The Lieutenant, which was a show that Gene Roddenberry worked on. And I think it's funny that Gene Roddenberry had said at that time, someday I'm going to do a show with you as an alien. Because he's got that weird look.
And Gene Roddenberry has that tact.
And Gene Roddenberry has that tact. And then I was also, there were other people that actually were approached first about doing the role of Spock. One was DeForest Kelly. How about that? That would have been weird, huh?
Been strange.
But the second one, which is even weirder, Adam West.
Ooh.
Adam West was unfortunately engaged at the time, filming Robinson Crusoe Goes to Mars.
But it wasn't
or Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
But wasn't Batman on at the same time?
I think Batman follows pretty immediately, but it's not quite as early.
See, there's an example of if a guy had come in and hammed it up like Adam West would have hammed it up.
Mm-hmm. We wouldn't.
You wouldn't be talking about Star Trek,
right?
It'd be like Lost in Space, but not even that,
right?
Be like, oh, there was this crazy show for 3 years.
It wouldn't be this world-spanning, undiable icon. Yeah. If it had been Adam West as Spock, we would live in a different world. Who knows?
Know.
Things could be crazy.
I don't know if I could take two actors in the same show that talk to each other nearly constantly that do the dramatic pause.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, imagine Adam West having a conversation with William Shatner.
Right.
How would they know when the other guy would stop talking?
If it was on radio, I wouldn't know who's talking.
Right.
Well, I think that's a different, you know, that also points to the different acting techniques the different actors used. I mean, Nimoy was much more of a method actor than the other ones were.
Yeah. It's true.
Right.
All right. So favorite non-Spock moment.
Favorite non-Spock moment.
I am immensely fond of the 78 Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Are you talking about movies? Or
I'm
you talking about
anything he did.
Anything he
that
did.
Where he wasn't Spock.
It's a tough call. I like some of the appearances he made just like on TV. Throughout, you know, towards the end of his life in the last few years.
When he started to get a sense of humor about
things. Yeah. That commercial he did with Zachary Quinto.
Right.
The car commercial is fantastic.
Yep, it's very fun.
That's really great. He did the top 10 list on David Letterman. The night that Star Trek, the reboot Star Trek came out. It was the top 10 list of, top 10 things you won't hear in the new Star Trek movie. And number one, I don't know why, it was like the right time of the night. I laughed hysterically to the point of tears at it. It was live long, prosper, and keep on hanging and banging. Aaron Leonard Nimoy delivered that. Just made me laugh uncontrollably. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
And Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Anyway, it sticks out in my head as some of the outtakes, if you look at the blooper reels.
Yes.
Where you know, he's being Spock, and then something crazy happens, and he makes a comment to somebody. I remember at one point he's like sucking on a lollipop,
right?
And he turns to Shatner and he goes, "It's okay, baby. We've all made mistakes today."
Right. 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 And you know, talking about the juxtaposition there, the episode, not Paradise Syndrome, but This Side of Paradise. Right, where Spock gets shot by the spores, and he smiles.
Oh, yeah.
He has that broad smile. And I thinking back to myself as a kid, I remember the first thing I thought was, how did they get Spock to smile? Right? It's just that really speaks to how real he made that character.
Yeah,
I think smile looks so unnatural.
I think back when I first saw that, as far as I can remember, that smile probably shocked me more than if one of the girls had just taken off her top.
Right.
Well, maybe not. But it close.
I think that's true, too. It's you really remember his personal appearances.
Right.
Because he is such a relaxed person, and he has this smile that lights up his entire face, which you don't see in Spock. So that maybe that really hindered him as an actor, because you couldn't help it. If he appeared in anything else and smiled, it would just be shocking.
Well, let's tie this into something I wanted to talk about, favorite Spock moments. It makes it when he does smile. And he does not just there, but throughout. That much more profound.
That one's a broad grin, right? There's a couple of brief ones.
One of my, I mean, the most obvious, everyone's favorite Spock moment, it seems, Amok Time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of on a whole. But particularly the very end,
yep.
when he's convinced that he's just killed his captain and best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And when he sees him and he smiles, he's, Jim! I love it. Oh.
Yep, it's fantastic. And he gets away with it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it speaks so much to that. That's what he's been hiding all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super.
All right, favorite Spock and non-Spock
moment. I've got to say that. I've been sitting here trying to think of my favorite non-Spock moment, and I really cannot come up with one other than that stupid commercial. and I guess it goes back to, well, yeah, I guess he really did get typecasted. I mean, you mentioned Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Even that, though, is like, it always seemed to me that that was a... because you were Spock.
Yeah, that's true.
But I cannot think of a single non-Spock moment that really that sticks in my memory, that really impacted me.
Favorite Spock moment, then?
Favorite Spock moment is really tough. We were talking before about the bearskins and or stone knives and bearskins moment in City on the Edge of Forever, which is really great, and the Jim moment in Amok Time,
and also when the Guardians are accusing him of having inferior intellect to theirs, the look it's like
right.
He gives them that eyebrow like
right
really.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Spock moment?
Favorite Spock moment? The most profound one, of course, is the death scene in Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
And no joke, squalling like an infant in the theater with a teardrop shooting out of my face
right.
when I first saw that. So that was probably the most touched I was by any moment. As far as the original series goes, I really do like it's This Side of Paradise, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that whole episode when he's... the very end, he's like, what'd you take away from it? He was like, well, I was happy.
Right.
I thought that was great. Non-Spock moments, I loved the show In Search Of as a kid.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Alien conspiracy show before the guy with the freaky hair. Fantastic. Love that.
Shelly, I'm sure one last thing, because I know Jeff is going to play off of this as well. Civilization 4?
Absolutely. The
every time that you unlock a technology in Civilization 4, Leonard Nimoy has a little thing to say, and it reinforces that idea that I once threw Jeff's way. If Leonard Nimoy told you anything, you'd believe it.
Yes,
he could say, Jeff, the sky is green, grass is red. And you'd be like, yes, Leonard Nimoy. That is absolutely true.
Sounds logical.
Never doubted you.
Communism
works. Says it's true. It's got to be true.
I believe it.
So over the past past 3 days, we've just seen an outpouring of love and tribute to Leonard Nimoy all over the internet. I mean, we've seen people, both famous people and just our friends, say things like, this is the only time I've cried when a celebrity has died. And people have made some very personal statements about how Leonard Nimoy has impacted their life. People from NASA saying, I wouldn't have gone into this career if it weren't for Leonard Nimoy and Star Trek. And it's been particularly true in our own gaming community, our own geek community, and a lot of people have been saying very similar things. And this is one thing that was written by Kurt Covert of Smirk and Dagger Games that I think summarizes what I've seen over and over among many people, and he does it quite eloquently. And I personally can relate to this. I don't know if the rest of you can, but I'm assuming you can. If you grew up sort of sport person, a non-popular kid, an intellectual, someone who was interested in science, someone who was interested in books, I think that you can relate to this. Leonard Nimoy wrote a book entitled I Am Not Spock. No doubt that is true. But for me, like so many others, he always will be, and importantly so. When I was very young, I often felt I was an outsider looking in, or trying to blend into a culture that I did not fully understand, nor that understood me. A therapist once told my mother that the issue was that I was a 30-year-old in the body of a third grader. Other kids just knew I was different and lashed out often and with regularity. It was about the same time that I saw Star Trek for the first time. The character of Spock, so beautifully played by Leonard Nimoy, spoke to me in ways I cannot express. It was as though I had found a kindred soul, one for whom reason would always win out over the irrational. Logic, a respect for infinite diversity, nonviolence. He represented the same philosophies I held dear. And it was always so clear to me that Spock's passions ran deep, if silent. The character Nimoy created connected with me on a very profound level and still does. And so it saddens me greatly to hear of his passing. A dear friend I never knew. I thank you, Mr. Nimoy, for the role you played in my life, even if by all accounts it was simply a role in a TV show. Peace and long life on your ongoing voyage.
Yep. Some nice words.
To Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy.
To Mr. Spock.
and Leonard Nimoy. Cheers.
You know, I was, as you were reading that, I was also thinking about, I think, another great tribute. There's a South Park episode. It's an older South Park episode, but there's a South Park episode. I can't even remember who says it, but one of the kids says, like it says in the Bible, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. The other kid says, that's not the Bible, that's from Star Trek. He says, Star Trek, Bible, whatever. yes, and that's the level of importance that I think that it has to many
Indeed.
Of us.
Indeed.
So, Jeff Luce, your agonizer, please.
That would be the voyage home.
Oh, wow. Does evil Spock count as a non-Spock moment?
Nope. No, he's still Spock. Still Spock. All right. Anything else?
I think that's going to do it for this very special episode of the Nerd Trap. Thank you for joining us on this less joyous occasion.
And we'll get back to our regularly scheduled episode as soon as we get our act together.
Yeah.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah. Sounds good.